Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen. I'm joined today by Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell and her Corridor news readers Chloe Weinstein, Simone Utley, and Jaya Francis. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, featuring an interview with Chloe Stewart of the Queens Community Housing Residents Association about a proposed 35% rent increase and the impact it will have on the current community housing residents.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. The Queens Community Housing Residents Association, QCHRA, an association which was formed by people who live in housing managed by Queens, is speaking out regarding the sudden rent increase of 10.5% that they were made aware of in late December, as well as the disappointing series of discussions with the university over the past few months. Chloe and Valentina, members of QCHRA and graduate students at Queens, sat down with CFRC to discuss where they are now with Queens Community Housing, and what their next steps are after their last discussion with the university in March. Here's a bit of our conversation.
To start us off, I was wondering if you could introduce yourselves and share a little bit about QCHRA just in general for folks who aren't aware.
Sure. My name is Chloe. I'm a postdoctoral fellow here at Queens.
My name is Valentina. I'm a PhD student in the English department.
And the Queens Community Housing Residents Association, or QCHRA, is a group that has been formed by the people who live in community housing residences. So that's housing that's managed by Queens, and that would be John Orr and Ann Clacken are the two sites. These are predominantly grad students. And basically, QCHRA is kind of like a union that you would have at your job, but instead of being for people who work together, it's people who live in the same buildings. So we kind of formed together after it became clear that Queens Community Housing was planning to make a number of changes to our living situations. This included a huge rent increase, much above the provincial guidelines. So the provincial guidelines are 2.5% per year, and Queens Community Housing was intending to raise our rent 10.5% for the coming year. And they recently revealed that they're planning to do that again for the year after that, and then again for the year after that. So that's altogether a 35% rent increase. They're also instituting a number of other changes that would be very problematic for people who live there. Mm-hmm. Things like limiting how long you can stay in housing. So even if you're still a student, if you've completed as many years as they believe it should take you to complete your graduate degree, then they will evict you from your home.
Yes, on this thing was quite funny. I think we will talk about that later, but we had a meeting with community housing on March 6th, I believe. Mm-hmm. And at this meeting, we said, so are you planning to institute a limit of 3 years for PhD students? And they said, yes. And we're like, well, first of all, it's not 3 years, it's four. And second, it's not four either. Because realistically speaking, nobody finishes their PhD in 4 years. Mm-hmm. And they were surprised by that, which is like, didn't you research this? This isn't exactly, occult knowledge known to very few people. This is very well known. So they have imposed a 3-year lease renewal limit for PhD students, a 1 year for master's students. And the thing that is intriguing, so to speak, is that many students who get their master's here, they usually think about getting their PhD here. Mm-hmm. And you would think, oh, so you get 1 year as a master's student and then 3 years as a PhD student. No, you get your lease renewal as a master's student.
What it is if you are a master's student and you get to roll over into your PhD, you're only allowed to stay in community housing for 4 years. So you'd only be able to stay for the first 2 years of your PhD, and then you would be evicted. So even though you've started a new degree, a completely different degree, and you're still a student at Queen's, they would not allow you to stay in housing.
Yeah. And I believe these changes came quite suddenly as well. If people just received notices, is that sort of how it went?
Yeah. So actually, it was quite this like strange process where in October, community housing had a meeting with SGPS, and in that meeting, they mentioned, oh, by the way, we're planning to make these changes to housing. How do you feel about it? And SGPS said, no, you can't do that. These changes are bad, and we can't see anybody thinking these are good changes. And they let our union, which is PSAC 901, know about these changes, which is how all of us found out. None of us knew, and community housing was not communicating to us that these were coming down the line. It was only because SGPS let us know. And then they kept completely silent about it until we heard from them. So on December 20th, which is already after most people have left for the winter holidays, like over that break, on December 20th, they slid notices under our doors, letting us know how much the rent increase would be and letting us know that, that this was non-negotiable, and also demanding that we sign our lease renewal request a full month earlier than usual, which we think was a way of getting people to basically like kind of have to do it right away rather than like letting people consider as they would have been able to do before, because they wanted us to agree to that rent increase, which this is also the first time we heard the actual number, that 10.5%. They had not been at all sharing what that would be before they slipped that notice under our doors.
It is worth noting, by the way, that we signed a lease renewal, like we applied to renew our lease. Our new leases have not come yet. They are coming in April. We don't know when. Allegedly, they're coming in April. But I guess that, to be fair, and it's not much fairness, they did send an email in November, quite late in November, though, where they say that we could check on the site for the new fair access policy changes. Now, I say to be fair, but when you go to that site, you can find their proposals, but they're not very clear. Like they did say, we are thinking of raising rent. They did not give a number. They did not say how much. They did say nothing. They are saying, we are thinking of renewing Anklagen. They're not saying when. They're not saying, they're just thinking about it in the future. It's implied that it's going to be essentially a renovation, but they're not saying that. They're saying we are thinking of putting a lease renewal. They're not very clear about that. So, yeah, they did send out an email in November that wasn't very clear, sending us to a page in the site that is not very clear. So, yes, in their defense, they did that.
Yeah, we're just feeling this lack of transparency basically throughout all of this.
Yeah, I think that's sort of like our big complaints, other than, of course, all of these changes that obviously none of us agree with. The lack of transparency has been, like, really upsetting. A lot of people obviously live in this housing. They rely on it to be able to have their families live. Many people who live in housing have children. Multiple children sometimes they've got parents living with them, people live there with spouses and partners, and everybody kind of relies on this because, as you're probably aware, like graduate students are paid very little at this university, exceptionally little, and the cost of living, of course, as everybody knows, is going up and up and up in this city and across the country and in the world, let's be fair. It is certainly going up everywhere, but funding packages are not going up. A majority of graduate students in this university earn less than $30,000 a year, often substantially less than that. And that amount is what they're paid, not considering that they have to pay tuition back out of that. So for every amount that somebody earns, you have to take like $8,000 off of that at least to account for tuition. And then they're expected to live on that. They have to pay rent. They have to pay for food. They have to take care of their children. They have to take care of their families, all on like $10,000 a year, sometimes less.
Chloe and Valentina also discussed their last meeting with the university on March 6th, where they also stated to the university that they are planning to bring this to the landlord-tenant board. So you're given that 10.5 figure sort of in December, and then March 6th, you had that conversation. Was that sort of the last formal communication that you had with Queens Community Housing?
Yeah. So basically, one of the things that sort of community housing has been pointing to this whole time is that as an educational landlord, they are allowed to exceed the provincial guidelines of rent increases because they're exempt from that increased limit, which is true. However, we formed this tenants association, the residents association, in October. So right at the end of October, we formed this group, and they acknowledge that our group exists. And there is an exemption to the exemption that they're using, where if a tenants association exists, they have to consult with that association before they raise rent. They have to. Legally, they must. Like, it is required that they do that, regardless of the fact that they're exempt because they're an educational landlord. But they didn't, because of course they slipped those notes under our doors without ever speaking to any of us, even though they acknowledged that they knew that we existed. So we went to this meeting with them on March 6th, as you brought up. At this meeting, it did not go well. I think if anybody has been following the way that conversations with upper administration has been going at this university thus far, it's a lot of people saying, like, the way that this is being handled is unacceptable and the things that you're doing are unacceptable, and the administration going, we're listening, we're hearing you. And then they don't do anything about it, right? They're listening. They're always listening, but they're never doing anything about it. It was very much that kind of experience. But because they knew that legally they had to consult with us, they called it a consultation, but it was certainly not that. It was largely an opportunity for them to tell us what was going to happen and then to stand there and listen while we told them things and then to disregard that at that meeting that we had on March 6th. We obviously all said, we do not agree with any of the changes that you're making. And we asked them to say very clearly, when were these changes made? When was it decided that these changes were going to come through? And they said, you know when these changes were made. And we were like, could you tell us when that was? And they said, in December, when you got your notice. And we said, interesting. So that's before March that you did that, which means that they have admitted verbally, and we have a recording of this, they've admitted that they did not consult with residents before they made this change. So it is an illegal rent increase. Whether or not they're going to try to go ahead with it, that's a different question. But it is certainly illegal, and we are intending to bring this to the landlord-tenant board to sort of fight against this as best we can.
Yeah, so that would be sort of your next step after if you're not getting a response in the next bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have not been in communication with the landlord since that meeting. They did, obviously they heard us say that, and they seemed quite freaked out by it, and they stopped communicating with us. They also stopped the meeting right there. And then quite recently, about like a week or less ago, they sent an email to tenants saying, we're pushing back the date when we're sending you our leases, the new leases. So they're supposed to come out in March, and now they're coming out in April. So we don't know what changes they're intending to make, if any, if they're going to try to, like, work around it and say, well, we did technically consult with you. So, like, even though you disagreed, but, like, we have the very firm, clear proof that what they're doing is illegal.
They also described what the university could do to prevent QCHRA from bringing this issue to the landlord-tenant board. And you're saying the next step is sort of that application to the tenant board. And I was wondering, what could the university do before that to prevent that? What are you asking for, pretty much, that they could do that would actually remedy the situation, at least to some extent?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, we're asking them to meet with us and actually meet with us. We don't want another meeting where they're presenting to us and then they sit down and listen to all our questions, and then, which is what they did, they refused to respond in the moment to each individual question. They sat down and wrote down every question and then got up to answer them, and therefore were able to not answer many of the questions that were asked of them. We would like an actual consultation where they actually speak to residents. We would like them to obviously not raise the rent by 10.5% this year. And we'd also like to really push them to scale back their planned further rent increases for the future. We're also asking them to consider other ways of increasing the housing supply in Kingston.
Basically, what we're asking them is to realize that we are smart people. Surely, they know we are smart people. They wouldn't have accepted us to this program if we weren't. So you cannot come here and just expect us to believe everything that you're telling us. You cannot come here and say that, this lease renewal limit will help make housing more affordable because it will make other people get into housing, because it is pretty clear to everybody that you're not really giving more people housing. You're just creating some sort of like a merry-go-round of housing where people just keep on circling around this. Are you fixing anything there? Or are you just mocking me right now? Have you just decided to make it difficult just for no reason? So like, have some respect, I think. Mm-hmm. Is really the baseline. So like, have some respect. And once you see me as a person with a brain who is able to understand what you're telling me, then maybe also converse with me and maybe we can reach a some sort of understanding.
Finally, Chloe and Valentina shared where you can keep up with QCHRA and support them.
If people are interested in like hearing more about what we're up to and what we're doing, they can follow us on Instagram at Queens Community Tenants. You can also check out our Linktree, which is like linktr.ee/QCHRA23. And that has like all of our information. We'd especially appreciate, we have like a petition up there right now that non-tenants are welcome to sign to show solidarity with us and to show that they disagree with the changes Queens is making. So we really ask people to sign that if they're willing. Keep your eyes peeled. We're going to be making some moves along with like the Students versus Cuts teams and other groups like that to start sort of bringing our message more fully into view. We really invite people to keep their eyes peeled and to stand with us on this, because we're not alone in this. We are certainly just one part, as we said, of the austerity struggle. And we would love to get more involved in the broader community.
Thank you to Christina Laurie from CFRC for that story. Up next, we have Dinah Jansen reading a piece from the local journalism initiative reporter for the Morrisburg Leader, Philip Blanchet, about Ontario's 2024 provincial budget.
Thank you, Jesse. Finance Minister Peter Bethlen-Falvey released his 2024 provincial budget on March 26th. Included within the budget was a $9.8 billion deficit, nearly double what was projected in his fall economic update last September. Spending by Premier Doug Ford's government was up by 7.9% from 2023, totaling $214.5 billion. Since 2022, government spending has increased 17.2%. Higher interest rates and a slowing GDP, combined with increases to public sector wages, infrastructure spending, and lower gas taxes, contributed heavily to the deficit. Bethlen-Falvey projected the provincial deficit to decrease to $4.6 billion in 2025-26 and post a modest surplus in 2026-27. Provincial spending will increase, with over $2 billion being allocated to home and community care. Nearly $1 billion will go to a new municipal housing infrastructure fund, and $825 million will go to repairing and expanding water and wastewater systems. College and university tuition will be frozen for the next 3 years, with a $900 million sustainability fund for those institutions to help them deal with any financial shortfalls. Over $26 billion will be spent on capital projects ranging from roads and bridges to hospitals and municipal infrastructure. For retirees, the guaranteed annual income system will be expanded and annual increases indexed to the inflation rate. Private income thresholds will be modernized and increased as well. The province will extend its 5.7% per litre decrease in provincial gas tax and 5.3% litre fuel tax decrease for another 6 months, leaving both rates at 9 cents per litre. Leader of the opposition and NDP leader Merritt Stiles called the budget a missed opportunity. Stiles stated that people are looking for better health care and homes they can afford, but instead they received an uninspired statement from a government that is out of touch and out of ideas. Provincial Liberal leader Bonnie Crombie echoed Stiles' sentiment and added that the budget did little to add skyrocketing rent increases. Ontario Chamber of Commerce President and Queen's alumni Daniel Titch was less critical and said that the 2024 budget was a step in the right direction. Titch was complimentary of the ambitious scope of the budget and noted that these bold investments will help rebuild business opportunity and business confidence. The province's net debt to GDP will decrease to 39% according to the budget projections. The province is forecasted to pay $13.9 billion in interest costs for its debt, a decrease from $14.4 billion projected in the 2023 budget. Thank you to Philip Blancher from the Morrisburg Reader for that story. We now go over to Jesse Bell with a story from Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forstall, on the City of Kingston's attempts to enforce the daytime prohibition bylaw at Bell Park.
Thank you, Dinah. Flexibility will be key, according to City of Kingston officials, as they attempt to enforce a bylaw that would disrupt an encampment of unhoused individuals living in Bell Park alongside the Integrated Care Hub on Montreal Street. During a virtual media briefing on Thursday, April 4th, Paige Agnew, Commissioner of Growth and Development Services for the city, noted that the city had, quote, backed off enforcement of the bylaw due to a blockade put in place at Bell Park. During the media briefing, city staff indicated that a press release on the matter would be sent out following the briefing. It echoed what Agnew said at the briefing and included a photo of people physically blocking access to the encampment. Still, at the Thursday morning briefing and in the press release that followed it, Agnew stated that the city would continue to press forward with its efforts to enforce the daytime sheltering ban. Agnew stated that city staff and the police liaison team are trying to approach the situation with, quote, as much sensitivity and care as possible. The press release stated that while city staff are asking for voluntary compliance with the bylaw, legal remedies will be considered as a, quote, last resort. Agnew cited direction from City Council to enforce the controversial parks bylaw as legal justification for the city's attempted evictions. Some Bell Park residents provided and posted letters stating that they are unable to physically remove and reassemble their shelters due to health and disability challenges. When asked about this, Agnew noted that the city's approach would be to connect those individuals to outreach services. Agnew continued and noted that the city is, quote, evaluating every circumstance and that the city will be there to, quote, physically assist with any requests an individual may need. However, when Agnew was asked if the city intends to have staff on site to provide this daily assistance, she said that the idea of helping people set up and take down tents was not part of the city's resourcing plan. Agnew noted that there are multiple city partners on site, including members of the Integrated Care Hub and Street Outreach Team. However, given that this is a citywide initiative, Agnew said that they would have to be realistic about what services they can provide on an ongoing basis. In regards to the, quote, expanded shelter space the city has touted, local media has learned that these spaces are not available as often as the city initially indicated. The city had initially stated that daytime services had been expanded with select community partners to offer 7-day-a-week service. Brandon Merrickle, Housing Operations Manager for Lionhearts Incorporated, explained that daytime shelter services are only available on weekends. Meanwhile, local Social Justice Advocates Mutual Aid Cataraqui Kingston, or MAC for short, released a statement criticizing the city for their, quote, opportunistic and shameless misinterpretation of the November 2023 Superior Court ruling on the matter. The statement released by MAC went on to discuss the discrepancies between the number of daytime shelter spaces reported by the city and the actual number of daytime shelter spaces available. Quote, the reality is that there are not enough daytime services available to accommodate the unhoused population. The statement continued and declared that expecting individuals to dismantle their shelters daily is a blatant disregard for their dignity and well-being. MAC's statement made it clear that they have no intention in backing down their opposition to the city's enforcement of the daytime sheltering prohibition. The statement declared that the group, quote, rejected City of Kingston's cruel eviction strategy and that no evictions in Bell Park should ever occur, but especially not when there are insufficient accessible housing options for the very people they are evicting. Harm reduction housing must be prioritized. More information on Mutual Aid Cataraqui Kingston can be found on the organization's website. Thank you to the team from The Kingstonist for that story. The article was written by Local Journalism Initiative reporter Michelle Dory Forestell, with contributions from Tori Stafford and Chris Vieja. Coming up next is Dinah Jansen reading a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about the approval of a new residential development in Gananoque.
Thank you, Jesse. New residential units are coming to Gananoque. On April 2nd, Gananoque Council unanimously approved a development application by Horizon Legacy for the residential units on 425 4th Street. Horizon Legacy wants to develop two blocks of stacked townhouse units that will include a total of 26 residential units at the 4th Street location. The proposal also includes a detached combined one-story laundry and garbage building located between the two blocks of townhouse units and an electrical building near the entrance to the property. 8 of the units will be geared to the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation's affordability formula. The entrance, located from 4th Street, will provide an internal driveway, which will allow access to each unit and required parking spaces. A total of 35 spaces are proposed, including 2 barrier-free parking spaces. Construction is expected to begin this June. The previous council approved this application in 2022. Then the approved development consisted of 5 residential buildings, each containing 3 dwelling units. Horizon Legacy's intent was to assist with providing affordable housing by using new technologies and processes to reduce the traditional construction timelines. Gananoque was selected as the location to introduce and explore the new technology. The project began with the installation of services to the site and an entrance from 4th Street. However, based on further research, it was determined that the initial project was not affordable due to construction costs and the material being used. The developer has revamped the development to continue with a feasible project. The request was to proceed with the construction of the 2 blocks of stacked townhouse units. The proposal provides 26 stacked townhouse units in the form of long-term rental opportunities for a mix of bachelor, one-bedroom, and two-bedroom units. The site is close to a recreational trail connecting to other areas of town and includes open green space and community gardens for residents within the development. The landscape plan provides for a variety of deciduous ornamental trees, shrubs, perennials, and grasses on the property, generally located along the rear yards and in front of the stacked townhouse units. The proposal has frontage and a new entrance onto 4th Street with an exterior side yard on the unopened road allowance of Birch Street. The driveway will provide access to the units and will provide property access for larger vehicles such as school buses and emergency vehicles. Brenda Guy, the town's manager of planning and development, stated that she believes that these units will contribute to housing supply and affordability in the region.
Thank you to Keith Dempsey from the Brockville Recorder and Times for that story. We now move to a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island, Ted Evans, about a $100,000 grant awarded to the John M. Parrott Center in Napanee.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. At the Lennox and Addington County Council meeting this week, the Long-Term Care Services Department announced their successful grant application for the Living Classroom Fund. The John M. Parrott Center will receive nearly $100,000. The Parrott Center partnered with the Limestone District School Board to apply to the Scheigel UW Research Institute for Aging and the Ontario Association of Adult and Continuing Education School Board Administrators Living Classroom Fund before its March 4th deadline. According to staff's report, the money will be used to purchase classroom equipment and technology, as well as going towards staffing costs, marketing, recruitment, and other operating costs. CAO Brenda Orchard notes the issue they're hoping to tackle.
This will be a great addition to the home. Hopefully it'll help with our PSW issue.
Orchard describes the program and what she hopes it'll bring to the center.
It's great for us. So we will have the classroom on site for PSWs. They'll get real world living experience with our residents in our facility. And we are very much hoping that then it increases our ability to retain those PSWs after they're done their course, because they'll be familiar with us, they'll be like family, and they'll want to stay.
Orchard noted staff's hard work and efficiency meeting the deadline.
Such a short turnaround time for a government grant program, but what wonderful work.
The school board is set to begin conducting interviews with prospective students, and acceptances will take place in June. For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans from CJAI-FM for that story.
Next, we have CJPE Prince Edward County Local Journalism Initiative reporter Brenda Little with a story about the opening of the first not-for-profit transitional housing facility in Prince Edward County.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
Leeward House sits on a large country lot on County Road 5, yet it is close enough to Picton for work, medical appointments, etc., and will have county transit for transportation. Rent will be $620 per month, and if necessary, can be subsidized with funds from the Provincial Homelessness Prevention Program. There will be a live-in superintendent, and residents will be expected to participate in the cooperative living environment, including, quote, house rules, cooking, cleaning, and on-site programs. Residents must stay for a minimum of 3 months to adjust to their new life, and then with help may move to permanent housing. However, there will not be a time limit on their stay. Mayor Steve Ferguson had this to say.
The opportunity presented itself, and the partnership between the municipality and Base 31 to make this a reality is just extraordinary. Can't thank Asaf and the Base 31 team for their cooperation in getting us to this point. And housing of all sorts is a key priority for this council. And I'm glad that we could take this first step with more steps to follow in the near future. So thank you all very much for coming. And thank you, Asaf, for everything you've done to get us to this point, as well as the PEC community partners.
Thank you.
And Asaf Weiss, Chief Placemaking Officer, added.
My name is Asaf Weiss. I'm a partner at Base 31 and PEC Community Partners, and really pleased to represent our partnership group here today for this really kind of important milestone. You know, you can tell that there was a lot of love put into this place, and we're very happy to be a part of offering it to people who are in need. We've said since the first days of our project that that we intended to be here for the long term. We fell in love with the community and the values that we're here, how incredibly engaged this community is in kind of taking its fate into its own hands, and the ingenuity that is here to create a project such as this. And so we've really wanted to be a part of that fabric and to be a good neighbor along the way. So when the municipality called and talked to us about this opportunity, it made obvious sense to us, and we were happy to respond. You know, what you have here is really kind of smart, resourceful public-private partnership to which we're contributing on a cost recovery basis. There's no material benefit to Base 31. This is a part of our kind of walking our talk of being a neighbor in this community. And it really kind of aligns all of the parties around to deliver something that people in the community need now. So we're delivering housing to people who need it now and to people who need it most, which I have to say our friendship is really very proud and very kind of a heartfelt pride to be part of this circle. And we're very grateful to the leadership of council, full staff, the province of Ontario, and Pelas putting this together, and excited to open the doors and welcome in those who need it.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
And thank you to the team over at CJPE County FM in Picton for that story. We now move back over to Jesse Bell with the CFRC Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston area.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with both the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region and CFRC's Community Concert and Events calendar. We start things off with a rather significant day, Thursday, April 11th, the warmest day of the year thus far, but none of that beautiful sunshine, periods of rain throughout the day and cloudy overnight, going to drop down to 10 degrees, so still quite warm, but the rain will remain consistent, and that will actually be the case moving into Friday, April 12th as well. Daytime high of 12 degrees, but more rain forecasted. Staying wet and wild overnight, dropping down to 3 degrees with rain clouds overnight. Moving into Saturday, April 13th, a lower chance of rain, only about a 30% chance of precipitation, but also colder than any other day this week with a daytime high of 8 degrees, dropping down to 4 degrees overnight.
But thankfully, that beautiful sunshine will come back, at least in part, on Sunday, April 14th, daytime high of 15 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud, dropping down to 4 degrees overnight with a 30% chance of showers. And then starting off next week, Monday, April 15th, it will be 16 with a 30% chance of precipitation. This has been your Environment Canada Weather Report, and now we move things over to CFRC's Community Concert and Events Calendar. Have an event you'd like covered on our website and news programming? Contact us via cfrc.ca today. Thursday, April 11th and Saturday, April 13th, the Kingston Public Market will be held at Springer Market Square featuring local vendors. The market will be open from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. and will also be open every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday until late fall. To view a full list of vendors, visit kingstonpublicmarket.ca/vendors. On Thursday, April 11th, head over to Daft Brewing at 768 Princess Street from 7:30 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. for Drag Bingo, hosted by Kingston's local drag queen legend, Rowena Way. They will be doing 4 rounds of bingo, and each round's winner will receive prizes from the brewery. This event is free, and there is no need to register. Also on Thursday, April 11th, Cam Cahan, Strawberry Cough, Monarch, and Pound Salt will take the stage at the Broom Factory. Doors open at 7 p.m., show starts at 7:30. Tickets are available for $20 at ticketscene.ca. On Friday, April 12th, Screamin' Sins, Sonic Souvenir, and Moffat Avenue will be performing at the Toucan from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. This is a 19-plus event, and admission is free. On Saturday, April 13th, join Gerald McGrath and his band for the release of his debut album, This Is Fine, at the Mansion from 1 to 4 p.m., featuring performances from Chris Jaeger and the Larks and the Killdeers. Also on Saturday, April 13th, join Treble Award-winning Irish comedian and science communicator Donald Vaughan and prepare to enter the magical world of science from 1 to 2 p.m. at the Spire. Always exciting, sometimes very messy, learn about science and laugh your pants off while you do it. And the best part? You can do all the tricks at home using everyday household items. You too can become a science wizard and amaze your family and friends. Tickets are available on Eventbrite for $17. Queen's Musical Theatre presents The Addams Family, a new musical comedy following the spookiest, kookiest family there is, with a book by Marshall Brickman and Rick Ellis, and music and lyrics by Andrew Lipa. The show runs until Sunday, April 14th at the Rotunda Theater in Theological Hall. Tickets and dates are available at ticketleap.events. Tickets cost $25 for adults or $17 for students. Are you a trans, non-binary, genderqueer, genderfluid, or any other non-cisgender person who wants a safer space to swim and to meet other students and trans community members? Head over to the Athletics and Recreation Center at 283 Earl Street on Sunday, April 14th at 2:30 p.m. for a solidarity swim. Swimmers will meet at the ARC Earl Street entrance at 2:20 p.m. This event is free and open to the wider Kingston community. For information and to register, visit gogalesgo.com. This concludes your CFRC Community Concert and Events Calendar for the week. This is Jesse Bell signing off and throwing it back to Dinah Jansen for more.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and New Leaf Link. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more local and regional news. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong.
Your true, true friend loves you just as you are.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.